Hello, Rachel.
What up, Lauren?
I don't know why it's not taking Jonathan in this call. Oh, wait, there he is.
Hello?
Jonathan, hello.
Welcome to the Fordcast podcast. We talk about all of Harrison Ford's movies in order. I keep saying Ford's movies, like I'm drunk
Ford's
or something.
Ford's
movies.
Ford's.
Guess it's my Jersey syllabic S keeps creeping back into my accent.
The Fords.
Welcome. We are taking another break from the full Ford canon to bring you a really awesome interview.
Yeah,
we've mentioned him.
Yeah, he's pretty great.
Yeah, we've mentioned him on the show before because I've used his books for all of our Star Wars and so far all the Indiana Jones episodes for research. Is really detailed, and that's J.W. Rinzler, and he used to work for Lucasfilms, and he wrote The Making of Star Wars, The Making of Return of the Jedi, The Making of Empire Strikes Back, The Complete Making of Indiana Jones, The Sounds of Star Wars. Just some really great stuff, and we had a really great talk, I think.
Yeah, it was pretty cool.
This is the first time that Rachel and I are working from remote, though.
Yes.
So it's really weird because I can't see your face in front of me. And so there are no visual cues to, like, go off of.
Oh, no, I'm literally just sitting sideways looking at my room.
We are recording this before we post it on the 23rd, but Harrison Ford needs to stop scaring us. The scup scaring us? Oh, my God.
You're doing wonderful.
I'm drunk. I'm apparently drunk. Apparently my fruit juice is fermented, and I'm doing the show drunk. He had a little plane issue again. Just a little plane
just a little
issue.
One. He just, tried to overfly a passenger plane.
Yeah. If anyone isn't aware, he accidentally landed on the wrong one runway. He landed on a taxiway.
Not even a landing strip.
It's not really a landing strip. And he is under investigation by the FAA.
Oh, Harrison.
I made a joke on Twitter that the Star Wars cast maybe signed a deal with the devil and it's expiring soon. Or he just has 9 lives. My mother actually texted me today, should Harrison Ford be flying?
No, I'll answer for her.
I wrote, I don't know. I feel like though these are not really his fault. Like it was a very old plane the first time, World War II, bad engine. And this sounds like a mistake, but I guess we'll see. Hopefully they won't take his license away because I think that would make him very sad.
Someone needs to because the man just needs to stop flying.
It might be the case. Just in movies.
Yeah.
Anyway, thanks for joining us. We really think you're going to love this interview and let's go to it.
All right. So we are so lucky to have a special guest with us today. Special guest, do you want to introduce yourself?
Sure. I'm J.W. Rinzler. I used to work at Lucasfilm and written a number of books about Star Wars and Indiana Jones.
And how did you get involved with Lucasfilms?
I always wanted to work there, or from a certain point, I always wanted to work there. And it used to be very easy to see what jobs they had. It was just online. And so they had a job for an editor. And I applied for this. I was a managing editor at a video game magazine, and I, really wanted to work at Lucasfilm. Always had a great admiration for George and his films, and it wasn't far from the house. And then I just joined up as an editor, and then one thing led to another. I never signed on to write any books. It just happened that way. over a period of years.
Now, one thing I really loved about your books was how detailed they were, and it was really great to use for when we would do our Star Wars episodes and our Indiana Jones episodes, because there was so much detail to do. How long in research would you say each book took for you to get?
Well, the books, the first book I did was a chronicle, where I just followed George around for 3 years. It didn't take a lot of research, but it took 3 years. Then the next book, The Making of Star Wars, it probably should have had more time to do research, but it was because the 30th anniversary was coming up, it probably only took about a year. And then each one, and after that I had longer, about a year and a half to do each one. And the Indiana Jones book, which I assume you guys use more than the others, that one was a crash book too, and that was hard because it was four films in one. So you had to work fast. I had to go through a lot of research, a lot of just endless boxes full of production material, and know what was gold and what was dross.
Now, were you able to interview anyone after the fact, or it was mostly just books of papers and from Lucasfilms? I mean, obviously you had George.
You know, I interviewed lots of people, lots and lots of people. For the Indiana Jones book, it was different. That was one book that was different because Laurent Bouzereau was the official interviewer for that book. He was the one who was on set and following, you know, and was Spielberg sort of behind the scenes guy. So he did, you know, 90% of the interviews for that book. I only did a few. But then for all these books, my MO was to always use and prioritize the older interviews above interviews done 30 years after the fact, because
sure,
people just can't remember, and you literally end up making up things that didn't happen. And so for each book, I was pretty lucky, or very lucky, in that I found a lot of old interviews that had never been published before.
Oh, wow. Now, is it that they were sections from interviews that had just been cut, or literally actual interviews that just for some reason never, you know, met the light of day?
Yeah, each one was slightly different. For the Star Wars book, Charlie Lippincott, who was the head of marketing at that time, they were planning on doing a making of book. So he did literally, I don't know, 100 hours worth of interviews, and they just never saw the light of day.
Oh,
not a word from them. And then for Empire, Alan Arnold did a number of interviews and only used a fraction, like I'd say less than 10% for his little Empire paperback. For Jedi, there weren't as many, but the fan club did interviews, and so there were quite a few. And then for Indiana Jones, there were a few, and, you know, they were just sitting there in the Skywalker Ranch library. And so I'd go, oh, what's this? You know, they were just sort of all these little old, you know, the old cassettes on a shelf. And I go, well, that looks interesting. Because it's hard to tell sometimes from the description. It would just say, you know, whatever, Harrison Ford, 1982 or something. And so you didn't know if it was a soundbite or an hour-long interview. And I'm trying to think for the Indiana Jones. Oh, yeah, what I found for Indiana Jones, which was great, and I can't remember who supplied it. It wasn't in the archives, and somebody had a copy of it, was the original story conference between George, Steven Spielberg, and Lawrence Kasdan.
Yeah.
And that had never been published before. And so that was a huge wealth of information for the first indie film.
I figured I would kind of open it up to you, and I just wanted to know, like, what parts of, like, the series as a whole between Star Wars and Indiana Jones were kind of your favorites to write about? And what you already said, that you were a big fan of George, wanted to work for him anyway. And so just kind of what got you really into the Lucasfilm world and all that kind of stuff?
Well, I'm probably slightly older than you guys. and for me, the movie that had the most impact was American Graffiti.
Oh, nice.
Might be hard to imagine, but that movie was huge. And I was the right age when I was about 9 or something when I saw it, and that was just incredible. There were no movies like that mm-hmm. used the soundtrack that way, that had four different stories going at the same time, that had that kind of humor. It was enormous, and you know, the cars and everything. So it was just, I didn't know George Lucas directed it, but I figured it out later. you know, other times I thought, I don't know when, but sometime during the 80s, I probably read a book about George. So, you know, and I always love behind the scenes stuff. And so when I ended up writing the books, each one was fun in its own way. But I have to say, Indiana Jones one was a lot of fun, if only because it was not Star Wars.
Yeah.
The time I started writing that was 2007, so it had been about 6 solid years of Star Wars every single day. So in production, when we all started moved towards Indiana Jones, we were all relieved. Everybody in licensing and publishing and other departments, I think, were quite pleased not to be doing Star Wars for a little bit.
Is there anything particular about the making of books, obviously for us, has been the most helpful. I personally find them really fascinating because as a writer, we're both writers as well as podcast hosts, is to see the progression, as I'm sure you feel as a writer yourself, through all the different books. Was there something specific that you really found was the most fascinating from the progression from story?
Well, I think definitely the first Star Wars movie was so different from the rough draft to the final draft. I mean, so different that me and Randy Stradley basically joined forces to adapt it into a comic book. I don't know if you guys ever saw that.
No, I haven't. No, that's awesome.
Yeah, I mean, you guys are more, this is the Harrison Ford podcast, right?
It is, you know, and obviously eventually we're going to ask more, you know, Harrison Ford related questions. But what we actually do is, I mean, we're both big Star Wars fans, but we've been going through the movies in order and sort of doing a timeline of a career.
Mm-hmm.
And talking about the movies specifically, you know, as episodes itself. So we do find that fascinating as well. The movies as a whole, as well as Harrison himself. So we don't just talk about Harrison Ford. We talk about all the collaborators and the people involved with each film as well.
Right.
And the progression with Indiana Jones and with the Star Wars movies we talked about, early drafts.
Right. Well, certainly there wouldn't be Harrison Ford in Star Wars if Han Solo had remained a giant green alien.
Exactly. Yeah.
I don't think he would have wanted to.
No, I don't think he would have, from what we've learned about him.
Yeah.
And but that one was the process that George went through. As writers, you guys will appreciate it. You know, he didn't just write a script and then revise it. He wrote a script and then he rewrote it from the ground up, taking the same elements and moving things around and changing things. And it's I don't know of anything quite like it. I don't know if Tolkien did the same thing with the first few drafts of Lord of the Rings. I doubt it. But George had this very sort of kaleidoscope way of thinking, where it's like, okay, well, these kind of things are working here. I think he was doing it highly visually. And so he just sort of worked it out, and he was, you know, he kept on working it till the thing was done. And even then, he kept working it, reworking it afterwards, adding a scene there, trying to get this thing the way it should have been, but he didn't have enough time or money. So it's a fascinating process. And having seen him work up close, you know, it's just, we ended up working on many books together. And so seeing how his creative process worked was very, very interesting. I was just going to ask you guys about the podcast. How did you decide to start this podcast?
So I used to do these pictures on Twitter just to be an asshole, that were me imitating Harrison Ford pictures, but terribly. So it was one of him waking up in Working Girl, and it was me like in bed with like glasses and my hair in my face trying to imitate the same picture. And Carrie Fisher followed me before. And so she ended up retweeting a couple. And so then Lauren found me through that. And then we both were actors living in New York, and it just kind of blossomed into this. We're going to create the Harrison Ford podcast and watch all of his work.
Yeah,
Are you guys both living?
Oh, sorry.
You're both living in New York?
We are, yeah. We're both in New York. Usually we record together, great, but unfortunately scheduling issues.
Yeah.
Messed that up for today. But I had wanted to do a podcast, and I originally had asked Rachel to come on to interview her because I had not met anyone as young as Rachel who was such a huge Harrison Ford fan. And then it became, you know, I want to do a podcast. And I thought, you know what? Why not? This sounds like fun. And it's turned into a really, really fun thing. You know, we've learned a lot about Harrison Ford. That's for sure.
Well, I'm sure you know a hell of a lot more than I do. I don't actually know that much. I know bits and pieces here and there.
Well, why don't we start with this? From the from what you learned, what is your favorite Harrison Ford story?
My favorite Harrison Ford story. I don't know. I'm certainly drawing a blank. I'll just pick one.
Sure. Or what you find the most interesting that maybe a lot of people aren't familiar with.
Well, actually, this one was pretty good because this was a private one. I was helping him to write his foreword to the David James photography book of Indy 4. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you guys have seen that book. But Harrison Ford wrote the foreword, but I was kind of, you know, he has things to do, so I was kind of helping him. He would send me a draft, and I'd edit it and then send it back to him. And we basically fell behind schedule because he was so busy. And I remember being on the phone with him, and he was just so funny because I'd say, how are you doing? And he'd go, well, and I can't imitate the way he talks, so I'm not going to try. Well, I guess.
It's okay, yeah. I can't either.
I tried.
I guess, you know, seeing how late we are, not so good. You know, it was just very funny. He was very, normal, I guess.
That's like one of the really, at least to me, that's one of the cooler things I've always thought about him is he's more of a normal guy than a lot of actors you see.
Yeah, he's very laid back. I think one of the reasons why he's lasted, or he and George are good friends, at least it seems that way, is that they're both pretty laconic.
Oh, I could see that, yeah. You know?
Yeah. Then they all recognize, they both, and I think people of their ilk recognize it for an industry that's got lots of flaws, and you sort of do your best and hope that it works out well.
Is there anything particular, I think we can talk about Star Wars and we can move on to Indiana Jones, but of the progression of the character of Han Solo that you felt was the most interesting or that you discovered through your research?
Sure. This is going to be a long answer, so prepare yourselves.
That's okay.
Sure, go for it.
In the first film, you know, they asked, and afterwards, you know, they sort of would try and, you know, it's a sort of typical journalist thing to say, oh, you know, Han Solo is just a 2D character. And Harrison Ford would say, well, maybe he was written 2D, but as soon as, you know, I started playing him, he became 3D because because I'm a 3D person. I bring myself to it. And so that's what I add to the part. And you know, obviously most actors do. There's a physicality, there's a personality that the camera just picks up on, you know, if it's allowed to. So, you know, and the first film, you know, he was sort of more, I guess, you know, he wasn't as complex. And in the second film, was very interesting to work on the book because I got to hear the entire Irving Kirshner, Harrison Ford conversation that took place in Ford's trailer, or just a office. I'm not sure where they were exactly, but just off the set. And I heard the whole thing where basically Harrison Ford came up with the famous line, I love you, you know, I know, or whatever it is.
Mm-hmm. You got it.
Am I misquoting
it? No, you got it.
No, that's right. I love you. I got it.
Right. Okay. It's been a while since I've been thinking about Star Wars. And but the whole give and take back and forth between them was just incredible. And I think Kirshner said that Harrison Ford kind of a closet writer. And in that film, he got to, because Kirshner was incredibly collaborative, Harrison Ford got to add a lot to the Han Solo part. And that's why so many people, or one of the reasons why so many people love that film, is because it has three-dimensional characters. You know, the heroes really come into their own in that film. Although, personally, I still like Star Wars better. But anyway, it's still a great film. And then, sadly, what happens on Return of the Jedi is that they just kind of forget about Han Solo and Princess Leia. They're in the movie, but barely, you know. They don't have a lot to do. They're kind of just running around.
They kind of are. But it's funny, going to Return of the Jedi, one thing I loved about your book was I felt like it brought some insight into the sort of debate of whether Harrison Ford wanted his character to be killed at the end of Return of the Jedi. Because what really struck me, which we talked about on the show, was the fact that he didn't know that he got the girl at the end until it seems like very last minute into filming.
See, I don't know. I'd have to go back and look at the scripts.
Sure.
But I guess so. I mean, but, you know, when he wanted to kill off Han Solo, it was just kind of a flippant remark on his part. You know, I think he was maybe a little bit bored because he had done Blade Runner and Indiana Jones by then. So he was a much bigger star. So maybe he just didn't want to be in 20 more sequels. But, you know, George had promising him it was the last one. And I really credit George with saying, no, I'm not making those kind of movies where you just kill off characters randomly, which is one of the reasons, a big reason, why I would object to the last Star Wars movie where they did kill him off. That was very upsetting, just from a fan point of view.
Uh-huh.
It's very controversial.
I'm vehemently shaking my head, yes. Like, yes, I agree.
If you want to share your opinion on that, you're more than happy to. You don't have, I mean, more on it. You don't have to, but we discuss that a lot on the show because there's two sides of the debate, absolutely.
Yeah, no, for me, I was still working at Lucasfilm up until that movie was released, and I was, like, you know, very upset about it, and so were other people. It was extremely not a good idea. You know, but it was muscled through by, you know, obvious people, and that's the way it is. But I think somebody should, you know, they brought back Chewbacca, who was killed off in the expanded universe, right? Yes, Chewbacca. And somebody should, you know, we should bring back Han Solo. You started here on your podcast.
Yeah, I said he fell onto a ship in the bottom of that, and then the ship flew him out. And he's fine. He just has a hole in his chest. But he's, like, perfectly A-okay. He's just, like, blown out into space.
I was peripherally involved with the bringing back Darth Maul. He was cut in half.
That's right.
He's just, they have him on two separate things, and he just gets wheeled around everywhere.
Yeah, I mean, Han Solo was stabbed. Big deal. Darth Maul was cut in half. And we did this book. I had this idea that all the Episode 3 concept artists should do their own stories. And this guy, Aaron McBride, did what we called an infinity story. So it was just a story, but not canon. And so he brought back Darth Maul and mechanical legs. And then one thing led to another. The one thing led to another. And the next thing you know, it was a few years later, George and Dave Filoni actually brought back Darth Maul for real with the same legs.
Not identical,
but... So, you know, I anticipate that if he's not brought back in the films, somebody will bring him back in the comic books eventually. I predict. Yeah.
I hope my theory is right. I hope he fell on
I hope your theory is wrong. Right. Sorry. I hope your theory is right. I mean, he could have. I mean, Luke fell a really long way in Empire.
Yeah. Like, it's that same thing. We just don't know that there's a hole in the bottom of that thing.
I'm on the other side of it, whereas I need to have or would like to have a reasoning where he is dead and brought back as opposed to some soap opera like.
Or he's Ray's Force Ghost dad who's just mad the entire time that he's a Force Ghost. He's not even a Jedi. He's just in the background.
At the end of the original draft of Return of the Jedi, you know, Yoda was able to come out of the Force.
Right.
So I think, why couldn't Han Solo somehow, he has a lot of Force-sensitive people who care for him, pull him out of the Force? I'm just saying.
Sure. That would be great, too. I think that's very good.
Thank you.
Like you guys heard it here.
Yes.
We have many theories. Just hire us. Yeah. We'll write them for you.
Yeah. You know, pay Harrison Ford several million dollars. And
I think he'd be okay with
that. Get
him
on film.
But I have ideas. That's how it works.
I think it's. I think it's the just in terms of the story and the characters, is the best thing that any writer, producer, or director could do for Star Wars is to bring him back. Best thing. The best thing for the franchise.
Particularly now, the whole. Fans of Star Wars feel a little crushed. I mean, we're going to lose Leia because, unfortunately, you know, we've lost Carrie Fisher.
Sure.
I think that they, by bringing back Han Solo, they could do a lot of different things to ease the pain for a lot of people.
Yeah, I think you're right. And please don't do what they did in Rogue One anymore, which is make some sort of weird digital Leia, because that was very creepy.
Well, it was the... Oh my God, I can't remember his name right now. Tarkin didn't look as terrible because he was older, so he had like wrinkles. So it's like, okay, you erased all of the blemishes off of Carrie Fisher's face and made her look like a robot. Like if they had just left a little bit of blemishes, it would have been fine.
And you don't need to do that. Why just show her from behind or from the side or something?
Side profile.
That's what I was hoping for. Yeah. I was actually disappointed when she turned around. I really thought we would get like a little bit of a profile and it would be mysterious and it would be fine. I mean, I think Tarkin also helped because he was in shadow, so it didn't seem as obvious, but she looked like a cartoon character to me.
I mean, I did cry when I saw it the second time, and it was after she died, and I was like, okay, I'm upset. It's gross, but I'm crying. Like, whatever.
Yeah, no, it was sad. And Carrie Fisher was very sweet, and I don't know if you guys ever caught her show.
Yeah, we both met her. We met her actually a month before she died.
Oh, that's nice.
At the signing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd met her before that, and I saw her Broadway show. We're both big fans of hers, actually.
Yeah. Well,
particularly as a writer.
And apparently she followed your guys' podcast or something.
She followed
She followed her on Twitter.
Yeah. It was the weirdest thing. She would like the weirdest tweets of mine. I'd be like, hey, I have a show tonight at UCB, and she'd like it. I'm like, are you coming? Like, why did you like this tweet?
She was very active on Twitter and very nice to a lot of people. But I know we were hoping to have her on at some point. But
well,
I did give her a business card.
Yeah, you did.
Yeah. Well, I don't know what they're gonna do. I no longer work there, so I don't know what they're gonna do.
Yeah,
with
her
character. I mean, if I did, I couldn't say, but I have no idea.
Of course, yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
still,
I know they came
all
out
of the spoilers, you do know. Who are Rey's parents? What's going on?
With Rogue One, I reached the end of my inside knowledge. I knew, you know, some things about Rogue One, but I know nothing. Well, that's not true. Actually, I do know something about Episode 8. All right, I take that back. A couple things about Episode 8. But after that, I know absolutely nothing.
After that, you're in the dark. You know nothing.
Yeah, we'll come back to you after 8 comes out. And
be like, what did you know?
Yeah.
Well, it's not that exciting. But hopefully we can talk. Hopefully we'll be able to talk about how they brought back Han Solo in episode 9.
Yeah, exactly. That's what we should do. We'll all meet back here in 2 years.
Yeah.
And talk about it.
And talk about it and see how we were all right. We'll play all this back.
Right.
And we'll see how we were correct. We'll timestamp.
I mean, I would even take old Diego Luna, like put Diego Luna in old makeup and be like, Cassian's alive and well, he didn't die. Then I'd be like, you know what? I'm okay with that. But the fact that they kill off Han and then they give me a pilot who's sassy and kills people. And I was like, oh, great. You know what? I could take Cassian. And then I was like, I shouldn't have known he was going to die. None of these people were in any Star Wars movie up until.
So, yeah, that was my thing. Was
right. Right.
If they had all lived, it would have felt so plausible to me. Like, where are they? They're not in the story.
They ran away. They're on that mosh planet she lived on with her parents and said,
I'd heard they were doing reshoots and stuff, so I thought they might be changing the script and having them live.
Oh, yeah.
Because
I just felt from a story point of view, to me, it would just seem completely implausible that they lived if we didn't see them or they weren't mentioned, so... I like things to be connected and to make sense.
Right, well,
so
I just don't want to see a dead Diego Luna. That's all I want out of life is to not kill off him.
He's not dead, Rachel.
You don't see him dead, right?
Sorry,
isn't he just sort of there's
you see the bright light coming and then
the planet explodes, doesn't it?
Because they deliberately held back, so they're just destroying part of the planet. They don't detonate the whole thing like in the...
So, Cassian Andor could be alive and well somewhere in a Han Solo movie with Chewbacca.
Yeah. It's all make-believe, so anything is possible.
That's true.
True. It is all fake. Everything is created.
The first person they brought back, I think, was Boba Fett, who was definitely dead. But then they brought...
That's right, yes.
In fact...
That is true. He was eaten.
He was eaten. But they brought him back. And I think, I think Expanded Universe brought him back. And then I was once in the office with George, and he was seriously planning to shoot an insert shot for Jedi where Boba Fett crawls out of the Sarlacc pit.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, George.
I've said that before, but just so you guys, it is out.
I have such a theory, and I know it's like not true because everyone's like, no, the extended universe, it doesn't matter with the new movies. But I was like, no, listen, in the extended universe, there's the Solo twins. Jaina doesn't, like, she gets separated from her family. She doesn't know she's a Solo. She comes back and defeats her twin brother, Jason. So to me, Rey and Kylo Ren are twins, and I don't care what anyone says. Even if the movie is like, no, she's a Kenobi or whatever the stupid theories are, she is a Solo, and I don't care.
But basically, Star Wars has to catch up with quantum physics, where every decision you make creates another parallel universe.
Yeah, and then Han Solo is fine and alive in one of those universes.
They just switch universes, and he's fine.
Yeah, and Scott Bakula's there doing Quantum Leap. It's like a whole thing.
Yeah, exactly.
That would make me very happy. A Star Wars Quantum Leap mashup would make me extremely happy.
Great. You did say something about the conversation between Harrison Ford with the Han Solo scene, and that's just always so interesting to me because improvisers especially, because I do improv, love to say that that was improvised on set. And I'm always like the voice in the background being like, no, it wasn't. It was a whole conversation. It wasn't improvised.
Yeah, I don't know that they improvised a lot on camera.
Yeah.
I mean, you've seen the blooper reel. I mean, that was probably that kind of improvising there was.
Just them messing around.
Just joke.
I think also from an acting point of view, what's great about that transcript is how much Kirsch and Harrison worked together beforehand. You know, talking about the character and the motivation and why they would say this and why he wouldn't say this and coming up together with that moment. I mean, most of it was Harrison, but it really just shows that you have a director who is able to and willing to work with an actor and that it's a collaboration. One of my favorite actors once said that the collaboration between directors, writers, and actors is like jazz.
Right, right.
And I really sort of love those transcripts because you see that sort of jazz happening.
Yeah, and that's why I think a lot of directors or whatever, I mean, there's a habit in the film world to say, you know, sound is 50% of the movie. Everything's 50% of the movie, so you kind of run out of but casting is 50% of the movie. So if you cast it right and it gels and people are able to play off each other, even without changing the lines, it makes a huge, I mean, can make or break your movie or whatever you're doing. That's why I always say that Fred Roos was the unsung hero behind Star Wars.
Oh, yeah.
He, you know, he really advised George heavily on the casting, you know, and said Harrison Ford, you got to, you know, Ford was just in there reading lines. Mm-hmm. And then Fred kind of snuck him in there to get him in front of George and said, you know, maybe you should use Harrison Ford for Han Solo. And then, you know, one thing led to another. But, you know, he cast American Graffiti and The Godfather. I mean, the guy is a genius when it comes to casting.
Yeah, we've talked about him on the show a lot, and I know Harrison would consider him one of his mentors when he was younger.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Because he helped him get two of the biggest roles of that really jump-started his career. And also The Conversation, I believe, also he helped him with that. He was a big proponent of him, big fan. He pitched him a lot, but didn't always work.
Yeah.
Well, but with George, it did.
With George and, I guess, Coppola, it worked.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, he is amazing.
I have a question, because I always like knowing this. Out of the Indiana Joneses, it could be Kingdom Skull if you really want it to be, but what is your favorite Indiana Jones movie to, like, research?
To research?
Or in general, just in general, what's your favorite movie out of the series?
I guess I probably... Well, I don't know. It's kind of a tie, I guess, between the first one and the third one. Although I do think the second one is not as bad as people say it is.
I agree.
You know?
I'm a Last Crusade girl through and through. I love Last Crusade.
Yeah.
Last Crusade.
Yeah, Last Crusade is my favorite.
I mean, when I heard they cast Sean Connery as his father, I thought, talking about casting, that was... Great. Genius. You know.
Yeah. I love that, but I also love that Sean Connery was so mad about it because he's not that much older than Harrison Ford.
Right.
And it's just like, I feel bad, but also Sean Connery, sorry. Like, you looked old. way
well,
sooner
it's also,
than you should have.
It's so funny because it's really about what we think. And since Sean Connery was a huge star, you know, 15 yeah. years before Harrison Ford, you just kind of think, well, then he's old enough to be his dad.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, and it was, well, I think I was looking at the timing this yesterday. It was insane. But Never Say Never Again, if my math is right, was made after Last Crusade. So he, like, went back and, like, dyed his hair to play James Bond in that knockoff James Bond movie. So it was, like, this man's career. I was like, this is crazy. He went from
being... I didn't realize he returned to the role.
Never Say Never Again, I think, is classified as a remake of Thunderball. And it was made years after he had finished Bond. So he, like, dyes his hair black to do it.
It was one of the most disappointing movies I've ever seen.
It was terrible.
I was so excited that Sean Connery, but I didn't know all the behind-the-scenes stuff, but I just thought, wow, he's coming back as James Bond, and it was just terrible.
Yeah, it's not, they don't consider that a Bond movie, because like he's still Bond, and it's like all this stuff, but it wasn't made by the same people, so they don't consider it a Bond movie. They're like, no, it's not ours. So they end it with his original end, and then it goes like Roger Moore and all that. Like, they just pretend it doesn't exist.
Yeah, the Broccoli family, I think, is in charge.
Yeah, they were just like, nope, that's not ours.
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, so, yeah, so that I'd say, yeah, the third indie film was great just because they had got so many things right. It was so funny, so many great set pieces, mm-hmm. you know. It was just great. But the second one, I think, has some really strong stuff to it as well. Like, the whole dance fight in the beginning is...
I love it.
I love that part.
We've talked about it in the show is I have also a childhood nostalgia for the second film that I think also clouds it. The third is my favorite. And I saw it before I saw the first Indiana Jones. The same thing with Star Wars. I saw Empire Strikes Back before I saw Star Wars.
Bonkers.
Yeah. That's so funny.
Because it was on cable. And no, it's very funny. It's because that's how it was on cable. They were showing the sequels a lot, and then later on I was able to see it. And when you're young, you just sort of, you know, watch whatever's on television, not realizing. Actually, I think I might have even seen Return of the Jedi before I even saw the first one, because I remember thinking it was very weird that he was flirting with his sister.
Yeah.
It was very confused when I was a child why that was happening.
Right.
So I think it might have been after that. But for Indiana Jones, even though the third one is your favorite, what's your favorite behind-the-scenes story that you discovered?
Favorite behind-the-scenes, boy.
Or I guess I stump you with that. What's a story you'd love to tell our audience about?
Indeed.
Well, my favorite story was being on the set, actually.
Oh, that's an even better story.
Of Crystal Skull, yeah.
I didn't mean to laugh. I was like, oh, it's Crystal Skull.
Well, yeah, no, I'm not that. I wasn't able to get there for those 89. I didn't make it to those. But Crystal Skull was still an Indiana Jones movie. It was still fun to be there. It was the scene. I was there for a whole day, and they were doing the scene where they actually get in and see the Crystal Skulls in that room.
Oh, yeah.
And it was pretty exciting because George introduced me to Steven Spielberg, who I'd never met before, and Harrison Ford was there, you know, in all of his costume, and Cate Blanchett. And
I would have died.
Everybody. I met, I said, not remembering her name.
Karen Allen?
Karen Allen. I met Karen Allen and a number of them, and so it was just a lot of fun. There was nothing specific that happened that day except that I was there.
No, that's just awesome.
I think just being on the set of an Indiana Jones film, whether, you know, you like it or not after the fact, is still going to be exciting.
I mean, it's even exciting going to that stupid show in Disney World. Like, it's just Indiana Jones. It's just cool.
But, you know, Harrison Ford isn't there.
Oh, I thought he was when I was a kid.
That's true, you did.
And he really was. I mean, Harrison Ford, the person, you know, was very laconic and talking things over with Spielberg about what they should do. And I write about it in the book, you know, should I count off something or other? And he has a pretty developed sense of humor.
Mm-hmm. That's my favorite thing about him that people don't realize. I'm like, no, he's one of the funniest people. His humor's so dry. Everyone takes him so seriously. And I'm like, no, it's funny. Like, just listen to him and think about it as, like, being sarcastic, and it's great.
Yeah, it's something we've sort of discovered more as we've done research and gone through the movies, is that he loves a good joke, and people just take him far too seriously because they're thinking of his on-screen persona, and it throws them for a loop. And I think a lot of him gets misinterpreted.
Yeah, yeah. Do you guys talk a lot about how his... Because I know he's talked about it, his physical acting, without, there's no lines, but he's, when he's punching people and jumping, and he has a certain way of doing it, which is really different from most or any other actor. There's something very appealing about it and very comical. It's almost like silent movie Buster Keaton kind of stuff, except that it's more heroic than funny. But often it's funny.
Yeah, and I think...
Oh, yeah, and... Sorry, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, and I think why it's so funny, particularly with Indiana Jones, and I guess also with Han Solo, is something that Harrison particularly wanted to do, was that he doesn't always succeed. It feels very human. And when something is human and we recognize it, we laugh.
Right.
He doesn't always, he's not perfect. He's not a perfect hero. He gets hit and he makes mistakes, and that's funny and makes it more real.
Yeah, it's true with James Bond, too, and I haven't bothered to compare it to new movies, but I have a feeling that new movies don't do it as well, whereas James Bond just constantly fails.
Mm-hmm.
Fails and fails and fails until the very last scene where usually he succeeds by accident. Or he'll do some things but most of the time he's failing. Indiana Jones too. Otherwise, the story doesn't really continue. But there's a way that they do it which is more satisfying than I think a lot of superhero movies that come out these days.
Yeah, definitely.
But thinking back to the archival stuff, I thought it was really funny on Temple of Doom. Then this guy told a story about the elephant eating, what's her name's dress, Willie's dress during the poker scene. I thought that was funny.
Elephant was eating it?
Yeah, they had this incredibly expensive sequin dress made from these authentic 1920s or sequins. And during the poker... There was a poker game scene that they cut. Or no, that's in the movie. But anyway, an elephant who was on set started eating her dress. And before they could realize what was going on, he'd eaten about a quarter of it. So that was amazing. And they only had one. And you never have one dress. But in this case, they did. So they had to do this. The poor costume designer had to go in this mad scramble to find sequins around London to remake the dress.
Insane. That's awesome.
Yeah. And all the stuff related to his costume is kind of cool.
Like the indie costume?
Yeah. Have you guys interviewed David West Reynolds by any chance?
No.
No, we haven't.
I don't know where he is, but he's an indie expert, particularly the costume. He used to have a website all about Indiana Jones's costume. He knew where every little scrap came from.
Oh, that sounds interesting.
I'm sure my brother loves that man and knows everything about him.
We'll have to find him and get him on.
About David.
Yeah. My brother has been, since I was a kid, crafting the perfect Indiana Jones costume. And that in his Batman costume, he refuses to get anything that's not accurate. So he goes through and finds all these little detailed things. And I'm like, you just get a tan shirt and a leather jacket and a hat. He's like, no. It has to be specific. I was like, all right, whatever.
Yeah, there seems to be a male fetish thing about that. I want to be...
Yeah, he wants to be indie.
I actually don't not like that, but I did always... I got a satchel, and in licensing, the satchel looked enough like the satchel that he wears in the first film that they took photographs of it and used that. I don't know why. I guess for some reason we didn't... I don't know. They used that as the model for some of the licensing knockoff satchels.
That's awesome.
Although I don't know why they did that. We have the satchels in the costume archives, but whatever. Maybe they couldn't get into the costume archives. Maybe. Lucasfilm could be a weird place sometimes.
I had a question, because my brother's always said this, and I've never looked it up, so I want to know if he was lying to me or not. What is Raiders of the Ark... I can't even talk today. Raiders of the Lost Ark, an almost perfect film? Because not in sense of how it was written, but he was saying the way it was shot and every element of it was, they classify it as a perfect film.
Sure, why not?
I don't know if you knew. He just has always said that, and I've just blindly trusted him. And I'm like, I wonder if this is just a lie I've been told since I was a kid.
It's used in screenwriting. Oh, sorry, John. Go ahead.
No, no, go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, it's used in a lot of screenwriting classes as an example of a well-structured film. So maybe that's what your brother is talking about. I mean, a lot of, it's used as a teaching tool.
Yeah, but even a film like that, they ended up doing pickups of the, it was actually, I think, Marcia Lucas that, in a way, made the ending of that movie so much better. Mm-hmm, because she said you kind of just, you don't know what happens to Marion. So they're just sort of tied up and nothing really happens. And so she said, she started saying you need to show them. And so they added that whole thing with them on the steps of the, wherever they are, the U.S. government archives. So even a movie like that, it only came together right at the very, very end, which is what I think is so fascinating about filmmaking.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Yeah.
Filmmaking is such a collaborative effort, and, one little thing is off, and it doesn't all come together. It's not just one person, and it's also not one person who makes it a success.
Yeah, and I remember I was deeply impressed when George told me that, he plans for that. He would contract and schedule pickups because he knew that when he saw his first cut that there were going to be all kinds of things that he needed to change. And instead of going into this mad scramble and trying to get people and they're not ready and they're not available or whatever, he had it scheduled into all the actors' contracts that they would be available for pickups at such and such a time and had reserved the sound stages in such and such a studio. So it was all scheduled into the thing and budgeted for. I think every director should do that. unless they're really, really amazingly good and get everything the first time. But I guess happens too. I don't know.
Do you have any other stories that feature Harrison Ford that you think would be interesting to us? Or even Carrie Fisher, we have a lot of Carrie Fisher fans who listen as well.
Well, not that I can repeat on a podcast.
Well, we are unedited, so, but I understand if it's something that you don't want other people to know that you know.
Well, here's a funny story that's sort of related to her. She was kind enough to give me a blurb for, I think it was the Empire book or something, and she said, these books are like an LSD trip or something, an acid trip worth taking. And I thought, boy, that is fantastic. That's great. So I didn't ask anybody. I just stuck it on the back of the book, right? The publisher was happy. We have a quote from Carrie Fisher. And then when the book was published, the head of licensing came to me and said, what the fuck is this? You can't put that on the back of a Star Wars book. It's like we're encouraging people to drop acid. And I said, no, we're not. It's just a joke. Calm down.
That's great.
Yeah.
I just had one question. So other than Star Wars and Indiana Jones, do you have a favorite Harrison Ford movie?
That's a good one.
Yeah, I guess. Let me think. I think off the top of my head, I'd say Blade Runner.
Nice.
Yeah, Blade Runner, such a good film, such an amazing, amazing film in so many ways. He was really good in that. And I liked a lot when it came out, the one where he goes into the Amish community.
Witness,
that was good. But I don't know how that's aged. I just remember liking it a lot when I first saw it.
I like it. My name is said multiple times. And in Blade Runner too. My name's all over Harrison Ford movies.
Yeah, we're up to the 90s, so we've done Witness, and I think it stands up. I really enjoyed it watching it again as an adult. I don't think I had seen it since I was a kid.
Yeah, that's good. And I liked him in, I'm glad he's still getting good parts in 42.
Mm-hmm.
I thought he was good in that.
I haven't seen it. I'm saving it so that I have a honest reaction when we get to it, and I'm very much looking forward. I love history, so I'm very much looking forward to that one too.
I was a weird kid who liked Jackie Robinson as a kid, so I'm just down for it as a whole.
You haven't seen it yet?
No, and it because my family went without me, and I was the one. I loved Jackie Robinson as like a 12-year-old, and so I'm the only one who hasn't seen it, and so I'm waiting.
Who would have predicted that your two things you like would be combined in such an odd way?
Well, back...
That's true.
Back then, I had already been a fan of his, because I saw... My first Harrison Ford movie, I was 6. So I had already seen and knew who Harrison Ford was at the time. But I didn't know. Who knew?
Here's a piece of trivia for you, just apropos of nothing. You guys, have you talked about the fact that... I know, I'm starting to forget. But what is Harrison Ford? Harrison Ford has a small part in Apocalypse Now.
Yes, mm-hmm. Which we...
And what's his name in that?
G. Lucas.
Because it's an in... Oh, yeah. That's an in joke. Right, okay, that's what it was.
Yeah, and it's funny because it's like, I didn't know until we got to that part in the podcast when we talked about it, and it's right there on his shirt. I love in jokes like that, and I love that they did that.
It's also really weird. Sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
No, I was just saying it's weird going back and watching all these and seeing how, like, Lauren has pointed it out more for me than I have for her, but how things I, like, as an adult have interwoven into Harrison Ford movies I watched as a kid. Because I do UCB, and so she sent me the clip before I even rewatched American Graffiti of, oh, my God, I can't remember the guy who gave the UCB for
Del Close.
All their knowledge. Thank you. I was like, I can't remember his name. She sent me the clip of Del Close. And then, like, I go back, and my first movie I ever saw with Harrison Ford was Air Force One. And I love Gary Oldman, and I never knew why. And then I was like, oh, because I love him. I was like, this is the weirdest, like, life lesson that I was formed by these Harrison Ford movies, and I didn't even realize it.
Yeah,
No,
that's something that we talk about a lot on the show is how a lot of these films sort of were during our formative years and how much they have influenced us, whether we know it or not, as now adults. And it's sort of a fascinating thing how pop culture, even subconsciously, because it's all around us nowadays, influences who you are as a person and you don't even realize it.
Yeah, I mean, when you see a good movie, it's just like reading a good book, mm-hmm. or a great piece of music. You know, people tend to, the music seems more real because it, you know, it has physical dimension to it. But when you experience a story in a book or a movie, it has a real effect on you. It doesn't matter that it's make-believe. And so you can experience whole other lives and adventures just by watching movies. And they have a very big effect on you. And they really can. And, you know, I'm sure it's been studied, and I'm sure people have written papers on it, but it's not generally accepted. You know, people take it because it's, I mean, they don't take it perhaps as seriously as it needs to be. What? And I say that in a good way and a bad way, because I think a lot of movies have really questionable ethics now and show you really, really horrible things. And I guess it's a different generation, but I would question, if I were making the film, do we really have to show that in this movie? Is this really the right thing to be doing? But that's what I like about the old, you know, the Lucas films is, you know, he wanted people to enjoy themselves and have them feel good about life.
Yeah, I think sometimes that is something that gets lost in modern films. And
well, it was true back then, too. If you guys didn't grow up in the 70s, in the late 60s, everybody was killed at the end of every movie. It was so depressing. And not just killed, just like really killed. You know, horrible Bonnie and Clyde riddle. Yep. I mean, obviously they had to die. That was what happened. But movies were very depressing, and Star Wars was a huge antidote to that when it came out. And that's one of the reasons why it was such a huge, huge success is we were all so sick of movies that ended with everybody dying at the end.
So what's your... I
just want to say, and that's why killing off Han Solo is a doubly bad idea. Anyway, go ahead.
With Han Solo, it was for a lot of people like losing a family member because they grew up with this person and they meant something to their childhood. And so the wound was, you know, felt worse. It was larger than, you know... any old character, and I think some people just didn't really understand that, was that it was, conscious or not, you can be a grown adult with a grown adult life, but all of a sudden you see Han Solo and you become a 9-year-old or a 10-year-old again when you first saw it.
Yeah, no, I think it was a callous, flippant thing to do. The two of them, the father and son, don't even meet up to that point in the movie. So there's no real relationship between them anyway. I mean, the two actors, they do as good as you can given the scene. Mm-hmm. The individual scene was, you know, wasn't that bad, but it was just the idea behind it and the pointlessness of it.
Yeah.
It didn't really add anything to the film.
I don't know. I still am torn over it because, like, my brother pretends he's not a geek anymore, but he is. And so he was like, I'm not going to see Star Wars until, like, later. I'll see it whenever. I don't care. And then he was reading message boards and found out that Han Solo died.
Oh, that's how he
and
found
it was, like,
out.
One of those. Oh. Yeah. And so he called me, and my dad goes, please tell your brother Han Solo is fine. Like, he's freaking out on the couch. And I was like, I mean, he's not. He dies. And so my brother, like, now is, like, being like, no, it was the right move. Like, Han Solo needed to die. But, he, like, in that moment, he was so upset. I'm like, no, you're just trying to justify a bad move.
That's it. You bring up a good point, because I do think a lot of people don't want to be seen to be caring about it. Because it's like, yeah. Because, of course, it is make-believe. But like we're saying, it does have an effect, even though it's make-believe. And it was not a good thing to do.
No, that's like killing off Harry Potter at the end of the series. It's like, okay, well, my whole life I've cared about this character, and then you're just going to kill him off. Like, it's not fun.
Right, because now if you go back and watch it, you go, oh, boy, he did this great thing, and it's so happy at the end of Return of the Jedi, but I know in the next movie he's going to be killed by... Also, we're going around a very important point, which is, how could Han Solo and Princess Leia have a son that turns out that bad? That doesn't make any sense at all.
Well, that's why I'm so torn.
Or then they just let him go away. They, like, send him off with Luke and, like, don't care.
It's impossible given the characters as we know them.
That's why I'm torn, because I want to give it a chance to see where they're going and see how they explain it. But on the other hand, it was so jarring, and it was my favorite character, and it's done in such a... harsh way. I mean, moments before it happened, I knew it was going to happen, and I still screamed out in the theater because it was so jarring. Jarring, I guess, but I'm trying to think of a better word, I guess, but so I am a little torn on it, because on one hand, I'm upset that my favorite character is no longer in the movie, but I also want to see where it's going and see the end of the story. I feel like I can't comment on the story yet because I haven't seen the end. I haven't seen what the end game is. So maybe, you know, I'll change.
Yeah. Well, it's going to be a little difficult now that Carrie Fisher passed away.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Yeah, because I don't know enough. I can't help you. I don't know anything about that in terms of episode 8. I don't know how they address it. But I do know that the lead up to it in episode 7, I mean, you know, these were two good parents. Even if she's busy and he's off pirating, I would think that Han Solo would take his son and say, I'm going to teach you how to be a pirate. That's like the worst thing that could happen, you know?
Yeah, like he becomes a space pirate rather than a Sith Lord.
Maybe,
like, that's the worst thing.
Yeah, maybe he ends up in prison or something. But some sort of Sith Lord who ends up and then killing, I just can't, it's just nothing I can possibly imagine in the Star Wars universe could result in him killing his own father.
Yeah, and not even that, like, this sounds so dumb, but this is my favorite character, that Chewbacca let it happen. Because if Chewbacca saw what was going on, like, and Han was just not dealing with his son, you know Chewbacca would, like, drag him back to wherever Ben was and be like, here, be a dad, and just make him sit there with him.
Right, and where was, you know, and where was Luke all this time? I mean, that they'll probably explain, but it was just doesn't sit right with me. You know, here as we geek out talking about these make-believe stuff, I will allow myself to just, you know, get into it and say that.
Well, we have a whole theory about the beard, because he said he had that beard for Blade Runner, and then the Blade Runner trailer came out and he had no beard. So I was like, okay, so you lied about growing a beard. And then said it was for a movie that you had no beard in. So I'm like 99% sure he's in Star Wars in at least a flashback.
That's our theory.
Because he had that huge beard for months.
And he usually doesn't lie. He usually, like, skirts the issue when he's asked a question or makes a flippant joke or something. And he actually said, oh, well, my beard is for Blade Runner. And he didn't know he was being recorded, though. He was at, like, some flight... convention and introducing the movie to a crowd of people, and some of them recorded it on their phone. And then he arrived on set for Blade Runner without a beard. And then right when he did that, Mark Hamill shaved his beard. So we all thought that was a little suspect.
So you guys are following this pretty closely.
Well, now it's our job, correct. Unfortunately. I never thought that I would be the person out. Going, oh, someone, he shaved his beard. We need to pay attention. I'm now become that person because it's my job. Looks like our time is up. Thank you so much for joining us. Do you have anything you want to plug?
Not anything that I'm working on. I can't. I've gone freelance. You could look at the animated short we did a while ago based on an Edgar Allan Poe story called Riddle of the Black Cat. It's on YouTube.
Cool.
It's just a zero budget animated short. That's the only thing I can plug.
Awesome. We'll check it out.
Yeah, and we'll have to catch up with you when Han Solo returns to Star Wars.
Yes, exactly.
We'll talk about how we're all right.
We'll have a celebratory podcast.
Yep.
That sounds like a great title. You're on.
Okay, stay in touch.
We will. Thank you so much for doing this. Really appreciate it.
No problem. You're welcome. Take care.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
And that was our interview with J.W. Rinsler.
I think it was fun. I hope you guys enjoyed
it. Really,
we're having nice little breaks from the full forward canon, and we're going to go back to it in March, which will be our first year anniversary. That's exciting. Can you believe it's been a year?
Yes.
It's been a year of Harrison Ford.
It's a year of Harry.
It's been a year. We're not even done yet. So we're in the 90s, the lovely 90s. I never thought I'd be nostalgic for the 90s. It's really weird. I never thought, but now I am, because they were different times. They were interesting
easier
times. Easier times. So we'll be starting with Regarding Henry.
J.J. Abrams.
Oh, that's right. Yes, written by J.J. Abrams, who also appears in it. And then we'll be doing Patriot Games with special guest the amazing Steven from Beltway Banthas, our favorite podcast, other than this one. Steven!
Woo!
And so you guys can find us at the ForwardCatsPodcast.com. We are on all social media. At
you
the
can Ford find Cat, it all there.
Yeah, ForwardCast Podcast, except on Twitter at the ForwardCast PC. We just launched, as of this airing or dropping, our Listen and Win contest. So definitely go to our webpage and you can see the amazing things you can win. We're actually going to be doing pick a prize. There'll be like four different prizes, a Star Wars prize, probably a Carrie Fisher prize, Indiana Jones, Blade Runner. And that way there's something for everybody. Answer the trivia question each week from winter to spring. We're probably going to end this around May and then have a new prize. For every follow that you social media follow us, you get an extra entry, and for every trivia question that you answer. And once the next episode goes, that question will be gone. And please check our Geek Girl panel from 2 weeks ago. That's still up. You can listen to that.
It was pretty great.
It was. It was so much fun. We're going to have some of those ladies back because it was way too much fun. Once we figured it out.
Tiny voice.
You can find me at Lauren Milberger on Twitter. Rachel.
You can find me at Rachel Leishman on Twitter. Like, rate, review, subscribe, tell your friends.
Please, if everybody who's listening tells one friend, we will double our audience.
So we'll have like 10.
Yeah, probably. Yeah. No. We have a pretty good subscriber base, actually. Hi, guys.
Oh, hey, guys. How's it going? I'm holding a Wicket doll on my bed.
That seems to be a running theme, though, on this show, doesn't it?
My Wicket doll?
Yeah, you've done that before.
We've
referenced it many times. We should get Warwick Davis on. Then you can
hold my Wicket doll.
Definitely follow us on social media because you can win prizes that way. I think that's it, right?
Yeah, tune in next time for Regarding Henry.
Regarding Henry. Yay! No, really. I actually really like this movie. I'm excited to talk about it.
Yeah, it's really good. And my name's in it.
That's right. Oh, another Rachel. Oh, that means I'm going to have to record more people saying your name to edit within the show.
Yep, because it's his daughter.
So pretty much Harrison Ford needs to do a movie where someone is named Lauren. because it hasn't happened.
Not yet.
And always send us feedback, guys. Please review us on iTunes. It means so much. The more reviews that we can get, the more iTunes will recommend us. You can email feedback if there's something you want on the show or that you loved on the show or you didn't like on the show and you'd like us to stop. TheFordcastPodcast@gmail.com.
Yep.
Great. And next time we will be in studio together. So I can see your face.
And then you'll know the social cues.
Yeah, really. I'm just looking at a wall right now, and the wall's not giving me any love right now.
Jesus Christ. All right, guys.
Okay, bye.
Bye. O-R-N-D-O.